afternoon. Today is Thursday, December the 11th. Oh, 349th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from
Humboldt.
No. I was thinking Cutting.
Oh, yeah.
From Cutting.
Okay.
So it wasn't like Monster or Critter or something like that. It came from Cutting. No, that wouldn't work. Community Services District. You're not an executive director. You are a general manager.
That's it.
He still came from Cutting. That's the sequel to the first one. Dave Hull is alongside.
How you been? Brian. Good. How you doing?
Damp.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about damp. Dave's got a couple of good news things and perhaps a couple of surprises up his sleeve because he is wearing long sleeve today. Not his short sleeve Hawaiian shirt. It's his long sleeve, I'm a business guy look. So
we'll find out what
We'll find out what he has up his sleeve, which sounds a whole lot better than down his pipe.
Yeah.
When we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 314. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hull, but before we do, our quote this afternoon. Let's see. Ah, Agatha Christie.
Perfect.
Well, you think.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, kind of. This is from The Mysterious Affair at Stiles in 1920. Quote, every murderer is probably somebody's old friend. Tenor for the show has now been set.
Yikes. Yeah. I think I'll step out now, Brian.
Yeah. You do have the chair by the door, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Bad planning on my part. So what are you hearing out there with the extra water? Is it causing any problems, any complications in the Humboldt Bay area? I know there's a lot of water and creek tributary stuff out of the area, but in the general area around the bay, are you hearing anything?
Yeah, as far as just water and wastewater, nothing more than normal winter kind of stuff. You know, I think all of us, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt Community Service District, all of us around that deal with water and wastewater, we're all geared up for these kind of storms. They're not unfamiliar, and so we've got all the pieces in place to deal with it. You know, people, it is interesting. I think a lot of people, of course, and I think we've talked about it before, don't really think much about the water or wastewater. You know, if the faucet comes on when you turn it on and when you flush the toilet, it goes away. They don't really think much about it, maybe when they get the bill. But,
this morning when I was getting out of the shower, getting ready to shave, I was thinking, you know, in priority, water, electricity, roads, everything else.
It's true.
And I don't know if that's everybody's 1, 2, 3, 4, but
it's an amazing resource that we need to really watch over and take care of it.
Well, if you don't have juice, doesn't matter if you have water,
right?
The pumps aren't working. Dry is dry, baby.
Well, that's one of the things that's good, and that's one of the things that we spend a lot of time on is making sure that our pump stations and our sewer lift stations all have the ability to either have standby generators, you know, right there, ready to go if the power goes out, or that we have some portable ones we can drag around and plug in a hurry.
And no reverse switches.
Yeah, that's right. We did one of the favorite ones, I think, for the Humboldt Community Services District is back in the 2010 earthquake that we have right now. We have 29 sewer lift stations, okay? They all require electricity and everything. We have three mobile generators, and four of those have their own generators.
29 stations. Yeah. You've only got three portable generators?
Three portable generators. Four of them have their own generators on the four major ones.
Okay, so you got seven of the 29.
Right.
Want to be sure you live in the area? Is that what you're saying,
This is what my point was. During that earthquake, 23 of the 29 were out of power. And so the district crews were busy just kind of leapfrogging. You know, they pump this sewer lift station down, run the generator over to the next one, and then run back and forth. And, that's a pretty typical story. But it's something that again, our district, and I think I could speak for the other ones that do water and waste around the bay here, are prepared for. And so we have that stuff all set, ready to go, so that hopefully people don't even notice that's going on.
How much would it cost, Dave, to get the assigned generators at each of those lift stations?
Well, the good news is, remember, 11 of those 29 are going away as part of the Martin Slough Interceptor Project. So then we'll be down to a much, much more manageable number of those things anyway. It's expensive, and it's another maintenance thing. It's another air quality thing. Our air quality management district that we have here locally are great. Easy to work with, but they got to enforce the state rules, right? We got a $30,000 generator. Actually, it was $60,000 new, that had like 400 hours on it. We had to get rid of it because it didn't meet the air quality. Yeah, it didn't meet the air quality standard. So,
well, I know where you found it.
No, we bought it new.
No, did you? You bought it new?
Yeah, and we couldn't even sell it in the state because the state won't let somebody else in the state buy it to do it. So we had to go through a broker to sell it out of the state, which probably ended up going to where you're thinking. And somebody else will get it doing
somewhere in the state.
Somewhere in the state. So it's but all that stuff is behind the scenes that we keep up with.
It's 3:19.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hull. Kind of the day after the day that sort of was.
Yeah, it sort of was. But let me clarify something from the last segment there.
Would you, sir?
The generator that we had that I was mentioning in the last segment, it was in compliance when we bought it.
The 400-hour job.
The 400-hour job, yeah. So we barely used it, and it was still essentially like brand new, although it was about 7 or 8 years old, and the rules changed. So all of a sudden, it wasn't in compliance anymore, and it had to go away. So
No grandfathering,
nope. So it went away. We bought a new one. I think we got $4,000 for the $60,000 generator and spent $60 on a new one.
Only in government. So what's the next big toy you want to spend money on, sir? Holy cow. A $60,000 generator?
Yeah.
What, is that one of the big stations?
Yes. Yeah, it's the big generator. I forget how many kilowatts it is. It's a big one, though.
Whatever happened, and I know it's been long enough now, it's kind of like you guys whining about Prop 13. Whatever happened to all the generators and all the backups and all the stuff for the Y2K? Do they disappear?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or go out of service or get sold off or out of compliance?
Up to the hills? I'm sure they're all long gone now.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see because I thought everybody had, when you were saying there that some of the lift stations didn't have anything.
Yeah.
Well, I would have liked to have thought that if there was a fear that everything was going to come to a screeching halt, that there was some anticipated stuff there. Okay.
Well, and there is a program for that, but as the air quality rules have tightened up, we were just not able to reuse that kind of surplus, if you will, equipment. It has to go away in California anyway.
What do you guys do? I mean, if you can't use the gear, and you don't have the bucks, hope and pray.
Yeah.
So there's no separation between
mutual,
church and state. Then.
Have some mutual aid agreement with some other agency that could put it together.
Because I would think some of the smaller, more rural areas than what we are, if they're more hilly. I'm thinking like Siskiyou County.
Or oh, sure.
Some of the others where they've got to have some of these stations all over the place. What do they do?
It's a grind. Well, there are some grant programs. There's some assistance kind of things that are out there. But yeah, we have a bunch of small service districts just in our area here, and you know, they're almost sort of one person jobs. You know, and so we assist. You know, we're one of the bigger ones. We assist with where we can with, you know, equipment and personnel and stuff if something happens. So we're a good community of working together there. One of the things I wanted to mention too is this in this preparedness stuff is. You know, from our base there out on Walnut, you know, we're tied to all these pump stations, lift stations, water tanks, you know, through a telemetry system. So we can sit there real time and see what's going on, see if the pump's running or not running, or see what the water levels are and things like that. So we can direct traffic, and they're all on batteries and stuff. So even if the power's out, we do have a built-in generator at our headquarters, so we can continue to monitor how that's going, so we can direct our people. So that's why we don't have, you know, 25 portable generators or something. We can direct traffic. The earthquake thing I mentioned in 2010, where 23 of them were out at the same times, pretty rare, but we made it work, no problems.
Well, if you know, made it through.
Yep.
Okay, and if you've got less, you're going to have less because of the Interceptor project. Is that done? Is everything switched over onto that?
The Martinsville Interceptor project, yeah, it's in great shape. The remember, it had kind of two pieces to the main interceptor. There was a gravity piece, which was done a couple of years ago. The force main, which is the one from the golf course that actually pushes it right over to the wastewater treatment plant under Pine Hill and out over to the treatment plant, that just got finished here a month or so, two ago. So that line's in place and is serviceable right now. There are what we call collectors. There's five collectors that actually are former pump stations, lift stations, that kind of big main areas that tie into that. Those are being retrofitted right now. The city has five of them. City has five of them. They've already changed three of them, I believe. So they have two to go. We only have one, and I think we're at the end of the list for getting it switched over. That should be done early next year. Then the last phase is actually taking those lift stations essentially offline, which is just sort of turning the flow around, you know, taking the pumps out and doing some minor plumbing in a lot of cases so that it goes the other direction, right?
Can those facilities be utilized for anything, or are they?
In a lot of cases, there isn't much to the facility. You know, it's a hole in the ground and an electrical panel, and, you know, it's there isn't a lot to them. But it is... It is a point of overflow that we have to watch for, that we aren't going to have to anymore. It's a place that uses energy that we're not going to have to pay energy anymore, and we're not going to have to maintain the pumps and stuff that are in there. So remember, that was part of the driving force behind the Martinsville project, was to get rid of a lot of these stations to save energy and protect the environment better.
So they'll just kind of be mothballed?
No, we change the flow around, whatever we won't use, yes, if it depends. It depends on how they're laid out. But sometimes we'll fill in a well. Sometimes we'll just switch the flow. The electrical, the guts may change. They may go away if it's just a complete gravity thing. So it really depends which one it is.
So how you just fill it up like with cement?
Yeah, or take it out altogether.
How do you take out a hole?
Yeah, well, it's like a culvert that's down in the ground. It's like a manhole.
I'm glad you decided to explain that one. KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:30.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hull from the Humboldt Community Services District. Dave, the challenges I know with infrastructure are part of it, I think. Okay, same sentence. It works for me. are...
Only you would know.
That's
if
right.
you think.
That's right. Seems to be a little bit more difficult. And I don't know, is it because regulations are throwing curveballs at you? Is it price? Is it lack of proper note-keeping, for lack of a better term, the old days? So you really don't know where things are or where they're... What's the biggest challenge that you've got working with infrastructure?
Well, HCSD has done a great job. You know, I haven't been there that long, but they've done a great job of being proactive and keeping the their 80 miles of water line and 70 miles of sewer line and stuff like this all in good shape and all
and
these,
how many
these
bolts
pump stations.
In those systems?
A zillion.
Oh, see. You got the numbers. You've been there long enough.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there is a finite life for these things, and they have had an ongoing replacement program, which I think is the right way to do. I think where you see a lot of this, a lot of agencies, not necessarily here, but a lot of this infrastructure concern across the nation is because that hasn't been done. It's been build, maybe because growth has continued to push out, and the you know, real maintenance work hasn't been done on the other end to say, okay, this is 40, 50, 60 years old. It's time to replace it with something else. And then all of a sudden, all of that's 60 years old is starting to fail. And
almost
then you've got a massive,
collapse.
Then you've got something that's so expensive that, you know, if hard economic times, all of a sudden you don't have the money to do it. And it becomes a fire drill. So we see that in a lot of places.
Not a telephone drill, a fire drill.
A fire drill, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's make sure it's a power pole that went down.
I was changing utilities pole. There for a
yeah,
second.
I figured that, you know, that infrastructure reference just kind of keeps going on and on and on and on.
And on and on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the main thing, you mentioned regulations, and we talked about the generators earlier. That is something that is, you know, as rules change. If you have programmed out that you're going to replace a piece of equipment in a certain amount of time, and then the rules change, and all of a sudden you got to change it sooner than that, you know, that causes some ripples in your capital improvement program. You know, something's got to wait, and that may be replacing that pipeline that's 60 years old, so you can buy the piece of equipment that now you need that you don't really need, but the state says you need. So it's a shell game, and that's why we do a capital improvement program every year as part of our budget process, and it's a 5-year kind of rolling capital improvement program. So we look at everything out 5 years to replace, but within that, and even within a year, as things change, you know, it's not an absolute. It's our best guess at the priorities and where we should be, given the money, the regulations, the, you know, the severity, whatever. But it's fluid. It moves around as it's necessary. And then,
no, fluid. It's about as bad a pun as you can get with a water district.
I got more.
I bet you do. Let's save it for next time. Is it easier to be in an area that is stagnant, not growing, and do infrastructure replacement, or one that's experiencing significant growth, so you've got more outlay going on, more activity going on, but you might have, a focus on new rather than a focus on maintaining the entire system?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it gets to the place of pushing up to, you know, major infrastructure things. If it's just growth, like the growth that we may have around here in the next, you know, 15 years
growth,
or something.
Dave. Growth.
Oh, yeah, well, that's
expansion.
What I'm saying. Yeah, I know. I'm using that word
loosely.
Liberally, yes. But, you know, that's just going to require, you know, maybe another pump station, maybe another water tank, something like that. If we get to a place where it's big growth, where we have to build an entire new wastewater treatment plant because of the growth, then, again, that has pluses and minuses because it's new, but it's exceedingly expensive also.
So the upfront really nails you?
Yes, and the financing. But it should be all worked out, right? If you can't do it, then you got to figure out a way to do it. You have to adjust rates to make it work.
Developer fees on things like that really isn't practical.
Well, it all factors into the rate studies. When you get to a place where you're going to pay, you know, how you're going to pay back that bond that you're getting for this thing, if you have to adjust the rates over a period of time, then it works in there.
What's more equitable, the new guys?
I'm still working on how to fill a hole.
Yeah, it's good. Good. That'll probably keep you busy for a week or two.
Yeah.
If you have, let's say, 10% growth in 5 years in a service community, is it more equitable to hit the new guys with that entire amount or spread it evenly through the entire user base?
It is really kind of both. The new guys will pay a share, particularly if it's like in our area, it would probably be an annexation. So there's annexation if it was to extend utilities out there for this annexation.
Or drop a development within an area.
Within an area, it would just fold into the rates, everybody pays. But the connection fees and everything go into the rate study.
But is there enough then to offset the additional costs?
Well, that's what has to be figured out. That's why
If it's not, do you surcharge the new guys? Do you bump everybody up? I mean, is there a philosophical approach to that that the services district has?
Yes, but the philosophical approach is really shored up by what the consultant will figure out as far as the rate study. They'll look at the whole landscape. They'll look at the whole district. They'll look at all the fees. And what's coming up for this capital and the revenue bond payback and everything, and they'll work all this into a schedule, and then the board. This is where it comes back to the philosophical piece. Then the board will wrestle with whether that's the right thing to do or send the consultant back to figure out something else.
And I would imagine we're not talking about pennies and nickels.
No, it's big stuff, millions and millions of dollars. In fact, you know, our share, we just finished the bonding of the Humboldt Community Services District's share of the Martin Slough Interceptor project, which was a big deal for us. But that was $8.3 million. So
you sold all the bonds?
Yep.
How much do you have to pay?
3.9%.
Is that a lot?
No, that's a good deal. Great deal. Our ratepayers got a good deal out of that. But this ties into what you were saying before. Our consultants, that when we did our rate study a couple of years ago, they've already folded that estimate into the rates that we're actually collecting right now. So we're in good shape.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Dave Hall.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Dave Hall. Dave, you mentioned in the last break the bond.
Right.
To be able to do some of the work that is
finish off Martin Slough, right.
Finish that off. What's entailed with a bond? I mean, you know, some of us may understand what it is a little bit, but as far as being able to issue or somebody buying it, what's that about?
Well, I think the first piece is to go through and, like we were talking before, have a rate study done so that you know how much the project is. You got a rough idea of how much you're going to need to finish the project. You have the rate study folks go through and figure out what the rates are going to be. You start that process in motion. What we did, which I think is a real smart thing, is you hire a financial advisor that actually works in the bond world, so they can kind of be the quarterback for you to talk to all the people that rate the bonds and the underwriters and all the rest of the folks, all the rest of the players that are in this arena, and then it works through it. What you do is we put together a presentation. We went and saw the bond raters, and we ended up with a double A rating, which is real good, because our district hasn't borrowed money for a long, long, long time. So that was really good to get that high of a rating. We get the rating. Then the underwriter will sit down, and there'll be a day when they price the bonds, and you know, it's not really the noisy floor like Wall Street or something, where people running around. It's actually very quiet. There's all these guys in there with little, you know, three screened computers and stuff, and they're talking real quiet and whatever. But anyway, it's sort of the same idea. They're selling those, and they're trying to cut deals and get the best they can for us. At the
so
time,
you're your representative.
Yeah, well, there are representatives, but their feet are held to the fire by our financial advisor. So that's another really good thing, because they may say, well, you know, we could dump them all with Wells Fargo or with somebody, you know, for this, and you know, our financial advisor, you know, try harder than that. So they'll go back and negotiate it, sharpen
so
the pencil.
So they need
some
an authorization almost to
right.
be able to sell.
Absolutely.
To somebody.
Yep.
So then
it was, and it was all done in a couple hours in the morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Almost much ado about nothing, huh?
It was real interesting. It's quite a machine. It's quite its own specialty world.
And the amount of the bonds is predicated on the project specific.
The project specific and how much you can absorb. There's coverage ratios. There's things like this that they all fold into, you know, how much you're actually going to get. But yeah.
Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, thank you. Merry Christmas.
And to you and Crystal and everybody else.
Yeah.
And the Truckers Parade. See you Saturday.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah. See everybody
past
tomorrow.
Winners, you know. We'll be back.